My guest this time is Elaine Donnelly. She is the president at the Center for Military Readiness. She joins me today in the wake of Defense Secretary Ash Carter announcing Thursday that the Pentagon will now allow transgenders to serve openly in the U.S. military. And Elaine, thanks very much for being with us.
Nice to talk with you.
Three reasons, Secretary Carter says, is why he's doing this. He says he ordered a review. One is that he wants the finest fighting force the world has ever known, and so that should be open to everyone.
Let's address them in turn. It's not about having the finest force in the world. The so-called study was consultation with activist groups, LGBT activist groups, including, I might add, RAND Corporation, which does nothing but polemics whenever they're asked to issue a report on military social issues, just like this. They've done it every time the DOD asks for something like this, the DOD gets what they want. In this case, it is not about improving the military. It is a political payoff to LGBT activist groups. And it's the final gift of this administration and the final LGBT Equality Month, something to top off a series of things that the administration has delivered to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender activist groups.
Talk about that a little bit more, Elaine. Now, whether it's about the, some would call it the social engineering of the military, some would say it's just rewarding political allies. Other than the timing of it being Pride Month or whatever they call it, as well as towards the end of this administration, what do you think is the main motivation here?
Well, it's ideology. It's all of the above. administration yielded to pressure from the LGBT activist groups. The military leaders were saying we need more time. Actually, they probably said a lot more than that. But when you're a leader in the military, you have to follow civilian orders. So the military leaders are being ordered to adopt this policy, to promote it, to conduct education classes, even down to the Department of Defense schools, elementary schools. It's the largest school system in the world. Everybody in the armed forces will be indoctrinated to talk about gender dysphoria as if it is a normal condition, as if it is a civil rights group. They're being asked to join with DNA deniers, people who just don't believe that gender differences are determined scientifically. These gender differences are identified. They're not assigned at birth. There's no such thing as assigning gender or reassigning gender by surgery or hormone treatment or all the rest. So to expect military leaders to convey to subordinate troops something they know is not true, this to me is an underestimated consequence of this misguided policy.
Reason number two, he says, is there's a reality that we have transgender service members serving in uniform today. He suspects about 2,500 out of 1.3 million active duty service members. And he says that he has a responsibility to them and their commanders to provide them both with clear and more consistent guidance than is provided by current policies. What do you make of that?
Very lame. In fact, it's ridiculous. The so-called estimates, which are all over the map, any number, pull it out of the hat, that's the number. It comes from the gay activist groups, including the Palm Center, which is a they advocate for sexual minorities, the Williams Institute. I've looked at their reports. I've looked at their findings, their so-called numbers and data. They're all based on speculation. For the Department of Defense to focus on a tiny, tiny minority and disregard the concerns of the majority of people in the armed forces is more than irresponsible. The RAND report, which I had the chance to look at today, doesn't even address the problems that will ensue, and we're already seeing this in the civilian world. It's not the tiny minority of transgenders, people who are sexually confused. Most are gentle people. If you know them one-on-one, you know, there isn't something there that's alarming. But what about the people who pretend that they can walk into any private areas of the opposite sex, taking advantage of the elimination of gender barriers? Nobody's talking about that, but you can be sure that military parents and certainly children, women of all ages and girls, are going to be very much aware of this. So the Secretary of Defense is instituting a policy that will encourage indiscipline and sexual tension and a range of problems that have nothing to do with strengthening the armed forces. There's no excuse for it.
He says the third and final reason for the change, also important, is a matter of principle. He says Americans who want to serve and can meet our standards should be afforded the opportunity to compete to do so. After all, our all-volunteer force is built upon having the most qualified Americans, and the profession of arms is based on honor and trust. What do you read into that?
That is pure blather. We have in military regulation a list of people or conditions that disqualify you for military service. Among them are psychological disorders, such as anorexia nervosa. Someone thinks that they are fat, and so they keep starving themselves because they think they are fat, even though they are not. They're real thin. Bulimia, another way of a person believes something about their body that is not true, and so they react in a way that requires compassion, medical treatment, psychological treatment, but it's not a civil rights issue. Should we allow into the military anybody who has a psychosocial disorder? Gender dysphoria is a mystery to most people, certainly to me. It must be just awful to not even be clear about your own gender identity. You have to feel some measure of sympathy toward anyone who suffers from this condition. But to open the military and to make a ridiculous comment like that, that this is a principle that has to be followed, what about this, Mr. Secretary? The military exists to defend the country. It is there to have certain qualities that are unlike the civilian world. Honor, courage, commitment, certainly integrity, honesty. You cannot ask military leaders to deny reality and teach their subordinates to deny reality without having consequences, especially when you're dealing with an issue that has to deal with sexual privacy.
Assuming this goes forward, the Obama administration will, of course, accomplish gays openly serving in the military, now transgenders, and they're on the verge of women being potentially drafted into combat, depending on what Congress does here in the coming weeks. Overall, what's the impact on military readiness from this administration?
Devastating. What is harming our military today is not just the resources being taken away, but the social burdens being loaded on. We've had some embarrassing stories about, especially about the Navy and the Marine Corps, the abuse case at Parris Island, the Navy sailors who surrendered because of political reasons involving Iran and the Iran deal. When you see issues of sexual misconduct skyrocketing, not just figures against women, assaults against women, but male-on-male sexual assaults have climbed from under 10% to about 17% in only a few years. And there seems to be no end in sight. The Secretary of Defense at the news briefing yesterday was not even aware that this change that he just put his hand to will put into the military equal opportunity non-discrimination policies sexual minorities, including transgenders, as if they were a special class. Now, just today, I noticed a symbol of this that I've not seen before. We're all familiar with the LGBT flag, the multicolored rainbow stripes that symbolizes LGBT personnel in the military. Now there's a new flag. It is bar stripes, very similar, only they're pink, blue, white, pink, and blue. This, I guess, is the new flag for transgenders in the military. What day of the week are they going to be, this gender or that gender? Again, the psychological confusion must be so difficult to deal with. In fact, we know this. The evidence of it is there is a very, very high rate of suicide among people who suffer from gender dysphoria. Again, your heart goes out to these people. You want them to get medical care. But this is not the responsibility of the armed forces of the United States.
Elaine, what's your read on our commanders? You mentioned earlier on in our conversation that they have to obey civilian orders. Yet when it comes to advising and potentially protesting by resignation or some other form, it never seems to happen. Nobody seemed to be doing anything other than cheerleading when the gay ban was lifted. It appears that the Marine Corps was the only one to oppose women in ground combat. And now at this point, everybody seems to be cheerleading as well. So if the impact on readiness is how you described it, what do you make of these commanders going right along with it?
That's a very good question. If I were in their shoes, I would have resigned a long time ago. And we don't know how many people have just gone into early retirement without explaining why, because there is no questions are asked. They don't have an exit survey that that gives the opportunity for people to register their opinions. We also know that when the Marines not only asked for exceptions to the across-the-board women in combat policy, and they backed it up with 3 years of solid research, empirical data, showing that 69% of combat tasks, the gender-mixed groups, did not do as well as the all-male groups. When you go through all that, just to have everything pushed aside by the current administration, it does get demoralizing. And frankly, I think they are demoralized. I think the military is holding on by a thread. I think a lot of people are either avoiding the military. We've seen a survey, one that was not made public. I obtained it by FOIA, saying that if combat assignments for women are involuntary, the percentage that would avoid being in the Marine Corps, either not joining or leaving, would jump from 5% to 24%, I think, maybe 27%. So we know that there's going to be an impact when all of this starts to become even more apparent than it is now. Then comes the question, what will the next administration do? Well, if it's Hillary Clinton, forget about it. I don't know that our military will ever recover. I do think, though, that there is hope that the next president, the next Congress, may take an entirely different approach to this. Military people will have to be ordered to be very frank and specific about problems that have ensued. Right now, they cannot discuss those problems that they know either will ensue or that that already have happened. Let's hope that in the next administration there will be a political mandate to do all of that and more. It's the only military we have, and it's up to us as civilians to guard its principles, real principles, and its core values.
Elaine, unfortunately, we'll need to call time there. Thank you very much for your time today, and have a wonderful 4th of July.
You're very welcome. Same to you.
Elaine Donnelly is president of the Center for Military Readiness. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.